And good afternoon. You're listening to Jazz 91.9 WCLK. In the background, my man Lenny White. from a release called Present. And you know, Lenny's a funny cat. I got him on the phone. And this one's called From Present Tense. And you know, he lives in the present, he lives in the past, he lives in the future. That's what I like about him. He's always a visionary. And without any further ado, I'm gonna bring Lenny on the phone. How you doing, Lenny?
I'm all right.
Are you hanging all tough? Right. It's a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure to bring you on the air. You've had an illustrious career with my man, the Prince of Darkness, Chick Corea, and the beat goes on, man. He started out there in playing in Queens. You know, I'm not going to call it Jamaica Queens. Don't call it Queens.
Why not? Jamaica Queens. That's Jamaica
it's Queens. It no, it's Harlem. Harlem got an edge on. No, man, but, you know, you've been around. You know, you've been playing since high school, right?
Yes, actually before high school.
What was the name of the band that you had in high school?
Well, I played with different bands. I mean, but like there was a band, we called ourselves the Contemporary Jazz Quartet.
Oh, all right.
At that point, yeah.
All right. Then
we promoted our own shows, too.
You promoted your own shows. Did you play with the late, great Donald Blackman, the pianist?
Oh, yes, sir.
All right.
I mean, actually, I met Weldon Irving first, and he was the one who told me about Donald. And when I was starting a band after David returned to Forever, he told me about Donald, and I got Donald in my band.
Interesting enough, though, you know, you've had a career that has been very unusual because you've been able to swing through all the genres of music. And coming out of New York, we both know that you're infiltrated with everything at one time. It's just how you have to filter it. How were you able to filter and focus on each genre and collaborate with so many different artists?
Well, you know, back in the day, you know, you had to be able to play all different kinds of music, and you had to play them authentically or else you wouldn't get a gig. So you have to understand, when I came up, all my jazz heroes, like, you know, Art Blakey and Max Roach and Elvin Jones, Philly Joe Jones, Raines, and Tony Williams, they had all the jazz gigs.
Right.
So either you had to play funk and R&B and jazz, or else you wouldn't have a gig. And then when you got good enough to be able to play on the jazz gigs, they still had the gigs, so you had to be extra good so you could play if they didn't have a gig. Now, these are all the guys that I grew up listening to. They were still alive.
Right.
When I was playing. So yeah. I had to be good in order to get a gig.
No, well, There was no question how good you were. You were extraordinary in terms of being able to perform, but composing and producing, like on your recent release, the introducing of Letitia Gambi, you brought in an all-star cast, man, and put together something that is not only a cultural interpretation from Italy, but also being able to use, you know, some American standards as well. Would you like to explain how this came about in terms of you recruiting her, or did she recruit you?
Well, yeah, basically, there was a friend of mine who tried to do an interview with me for about 6 months, and this sort of night I was working, and I finally got an opportunity to do an interview with him. And he, in doing the interview, he had listened to the teacher's music that when she was on, I think it was MySpace or something, like one of those old social networking things. And he said to her, he asked her, has she ever met me? She said no. And he said that I would probably be the right person to work with her on some of her music. I never met her, she never met me. And at the time, Chick Stanley and I were going to play in Milano at the Blue Note.
Oh, okay.
So I got a call, and she asked to come to the show, and that's how I met her. And when I met her at the show, she asked me a question. She said, would I be interested in doing a project that would include Neapolitan music and jazz? And I said, Well, if you send me something, I'd listen to it, and I'll let you know. So she sent me a piece of music where she had taken an old Neapolitan standard and updated it, and I loved it. It was great. So I kind of did my take on it and played it for her, and the rest is history.
Yeah, you did a fantastic job, you know, on this particular release. Not that you haven't done other releases as well. In fact, in the background, I'm playing your Present Tense release, and it's interesting because if I had known you were from Queens, I would have definitely not called you. No, all jokes aside, man, I was really taken aback. You know, and I've been an admirer of you because you've played with Miles, Chick Corea, In a Silent Way, The Fusion, the whole nine yards. So you've adapted a true musician that can redefine and himself anytime it's necessary. You reinvent yourself. So with Miles, it was always a reinvention. You never knew what he was going to do, and he would let great musicians like you cut loose and be yourself. And really on this one, it shows, you know, your multicultural talents. And it's interesting because coming out of New York City, both you and I were inundated with music from the time you come out the womb, and for you to be able to and continue to do this with great projects, you've got my admiration, despite you coming from Queens, man. So, I mean, it's okay. But no, honestly, you know, when I was talking to her earlier, she was explaining to me about, you know, how your interpretation of some of the great music. I think O Solo Mio was one of them that you put your finger into it because it's an old standard from Italy, and she explained, you know, gave you a lot of kudos for how you were able to produce it.
Yeah, the funny thing about that particular song, you know, let me start by saying, for me, when people ask me what my profession is, I say that I'm a musician. I don't say that I'm a drummer, I say I'm a musician. And what a musician does is they play music. And they play all different kinds. And I was fortunate to come up in the 60s where you got to hear all different kinds of music on the radio. The radio wasn't musically myopic. You could hear Miles Davis, you could hear Led Zeppelin,
right.
You could hear James Brown, and you could hear John Coltrane. All on the same channel. And basically why you tuned into radio was because of the particular DJ. Not specifically for the type of music of it. You dialed them because of the DJ. The DJ would play all these different kinds of music. So I was influenced by all the different kinds of music. Hence, we come to O Solo Mio. I asked the teacher, I said, what is probably is the most famous Neapolitan? She said, well, I'll solo Mio. And I said, let's do that. She said, are you kidding? No way.
That's exactly what she said, too.
She said, are you kidding? There's no way I'm going to do that song. That song is corny. I said, let me make an arrangement of it, and if you like it, we'll try it. She said, okay, fine. Basically, what I did is I went back. I mean, first I asked her, I said, you know, I've heard this song many, many times, and I heard Elvis Presley do his version of it called It's Now or Never, blah, 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 blah. And I said, can you actually translate what the song means to me? So she made a translation, and she said, this is what it is. And I listened to the song, and by her translation, what I got was something totally different out of the song. And what I did was I took my exposure to early R&B doo-wop, and I took Every Little Bit Hurts. Remember that song, Every Little Bit Hurts?
Oh, yeah.
I took Every Little Bit Hurts, and I said, I'm going to make O Solo Mio fit inside this groove of Every Little Bit Hurts. Because it's like one of those old 12-8. You know, with the piano, ding, ding,
yeah, right.
Ding, 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 you know, like the whole doo-wop stuff.
Right.
And that's basically what I did, and I made it intimate from that standpoint, as opposed to it being what the regular O Solo Mio was.
Yeah.
And when she heard that, that's what worked.
Interesting.
So that's how that came about. But it was my exposure to all these other different kinds of music that, you know, I bring whatever it is that I've heard, whatever I've been influenced by, into whatever music I'm playing at the time.
You know, you've had a lot of influences, you know, because, you know, coming up in a multicultural environment, you're exposed to so much, even, you know, as a young person, from classical music straight on up. So you were able to, you know, pull as a musician, you know, some of those experiences, not counting the fact that, you know, you were playing music as well and being exposed to even more. What was your experience, and the listeners really want to know this, with Miles Davis?
Well, see, this,
different than with Letizia.
No, but here's the thing. The thing about it is that I was explaining this the other day. Miles Davis was a hero. And for young black musicians at the time, that was something different than what people call a hero today. I don't mean a musical hero. When I talk about heroes, heroes transcend music, sports, politics, or whatever. Like, you know, Malcolm X was a hero.
Oh, definitely, yes.
I lived in the time of Malcolm X.
Right.
You know, I was there when we surrounded the police station.
Right. And you had to come to, and you had to come to Harlem, too.
Right. Well, yes, I did. Yes, I did. James Brown was a hero.
Yes.
James Brown said, "Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud." Now, Malcolm X was a politician. James Brown was a musician. When Muhammad Ali beat George Foreman, it resounded all around the world. Miles Davis was a hero. As a young musician coming up in New York City, we didn't just want to play in Miles Davis's band. We wanted to be Miles Davis.
Yes, I agree with you.
The slick clothes that he wore, the cars that he drove. Miles Davis personified being an upwardly mobile black man. He was a hero. And me getting an opportunity to play with him was an extremely special part of my life. And I can't put that in any other words, because I learned so much. I learned more by watching him, talking to him, than I learned by listening to him. And when I got an opportunity to do that, that becomes really special. I mean, I lived in the time of Miles Davis, in the time of Muhammad Ali, in the time of Jim Brown. I mean, all of these people were heroes. Miles Davis was a hero, aside from being the fantastic musician that he was and continues to be. He was a hero.
I totally agree with you, because the first album that I bought as a young man was Kind of Blue.
Well, everybody has
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, I was a kid.
If you know. Don't have that, I don't know what's wrong with you.
But yeah, right. You know, that was the first one I bought. And it's interesting, because coming up in that area, like you, I listened to WLIB and WWRL, and they were constantly playing the music and the soul of the community, and all the musicians connected with the community, man. It makes a major difference. And, you know, I appreciate your explanation of your relationship with Miles. And what I want to know, the next question is, when will we see you perform? I was gonna let you go? Don't let me have to come to Jersey and get you. You left Queens. I know where you live.
No. It's a different climate now. You know, being a musician, you know, and playing all different kinds of music, you get a lot of different kinds of opportunities to do things. And mostly they have been outside of the city and outside of the United States.
Right, I agree.
I mean, this is somewhat unfortunate, but I mean, I think the music, you go where the music takes you. And if there's a demand for music in Russia, you go to Russia. If there's a demand for the music that you play in Italy, you go to Italy. I think also that in terms of the music that I play or try to create, you know, I don't get opportunities. I have to make my opportunities. I mean, for me to do a project like I did with Letizia, we had to create that ourselves.
Right.
No one gave us an opportunity to do that, which means that there are still creative people active and doing things today. So, you know, you have to seize the moment, take care of that, and do what it is you do. You make your own opportunities. So when you say, when are you going to see me in Atlanta, I have to make a gig happen in Atlanta.
No, I'm seizing the moment. I'm telling you. I'm not asking you. No, we want
to. New York. Come on, New York.
We definitely want you to come. In fact, when we end the interview, I'll get your information. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I appreciate what you've done over the years. And with the history that you have, you know, whether you realize it or not, you're in demand because people want to see, you know, Lenny White, who has this great legacy of playing all types of music and being with many different artists and having a global impact. So that makes a major difference as well. So that's why I was asking those particular questions, because I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to see you here. When was the last time you've been to Atlanta, or have you been?
Last time I was in Atlanta was, I think, 2011.
Return to Forever?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you were at the, you were at the Cobb Energy, at the Fox Theater, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw you, that's what I thought. I saw you then, and, you know, if I got my hands all hold to you, I'll let you know that you need to move to Harlem instead of being out there.
Well, you got to understand something, Steve, because what you're doing is you're defragging New York. See, New York is a big city, my brother.
Oh, it's big. It's huge.
Harlem is a part of it, just as Jamaica Queens is.
Well, we'll talk about that later on.
Well, but it just so happens that the real funk came from Jamaica Queens. Let me get started. Now,
I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you go. But don't forget the Harlem Renaissance. We started that. Duke Ellington, Billy Strayhorn. Need I say more? We can go on and on.
Okay.
But I like Tom Brown and Jamaica Funk and all that. And
Count Basie lived in Jamaica, Queens.
He lived in Queens.
As did James Brown.
James Brown lived there. Ella Fitzgerald. Yeah. I'm hip
Thank
to him.
You. Okay. Yeah. We're on par now.
Yeah, but
par.
Everybody's moving back to Harlem, so get with the program.
Have you moved back to Harlem?
Of course, in spirit. You know, it's a pleasure, man, talking with you. And the thing I liked about you, man, is the music. We want to be able to continue to play your music. You have a new release coming out after this, too. Am I not right?
I mean, you know, there'll always be something new coming. As I said, I'm working on a new project with the teacher. I'm excited because I played on this new project of a band that I don't know how to describe it. Somewhere between alternative and Afro-punk and pop music. It's called IUE.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about stuff that I played on. I played on that, and it's different for me and interesting. But, you know, I'll always have something new coming out. I'll always give you something so that you can play.
And I just want to thank you very much.